Jimmy boy.
Big T Shabs, what's going on?
Yeah, just us two today. Welcome to episode 74 of the Motorsport Republica podcast. Everyone, we have a big show on Formula One this time.
Yeah, it's a big F1 show. No Daniel today, unfortunately. He's away for work. Poor bastard.
He's away doing some stuff for Republica up in Brisbane, which is nice. Doing some scouting.
Yeah. seeing who we can get.
Yes.
But yeah, big F1 show, mate.
Yeah, it was a really interesting race last night. Lando's looking unbelievable. We'll get into that in a sec. But first of all, just want to say a big thanks to our proud partners, MJ Trading Cards. As always, every week we are proudly supported by them. Started by a good friend of the podcast, Mitch, grown into Australia's biggest and best sport card breakers. So we have an offer for listeners, 15% off their first order.
Beautiful.
On their website, mjtradingcards.com.au. MJ Trading Cards does an average of 10 to 15 breaks a day. So it's a big, big business, guys. Get involved. We're running it for the next 3 weeks, that promotion. So give them a crack. Give them a crack. That's all I can say.
Mate. Yeah. I love it.
100%.
Everyone hit up our Patreon. We've got a new episode coming out very soon. We're just waiting on one more thing to be shipped to us so we can get this thing filmed and ready to go. So head to our Patreon, Motorsport Republica. I've got our old special on there, which is hilarious. And we've got a new one coming up very, very shortly. We're just literally waiting on one thing, but
yeah,
so much fun.
You also get early access to our special guests, a discount code as well. So get involved, guys. Appreciate all the support.
Yeah, we love the support. It's really cool. It's really cool to see.
Results, Jimmy boy. Lando Norris, breakaway win. I mean, we'll get into it shortly, as I said. But yeah, I mean, 22-second lead over Verstappen, which is amazing.
Yeah.
So Verstappen in second, Charles Leclerc in third, which is a great, 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 great result for him as well. Only finished 3 seconds behind Verstappen. Homeboy Piastri finishing fourth. Carlos Sainz fifth. Sergio Perez sixth. Seventh was George Russell.
Yeah.
Eighth was Lewis Hamilton. Ninth, Pierre Gasly. And 10th, Fernando Alonso. Nice point for Aston Martin.
I like it. There's a bit of there is a bit to talk about tonight through all the manufacturers. I feel like, well, obviously we'll get into McLaren.
Yeah.
First thing I want to talk to you about was Alpine.
Yeah.
And a bit of a resurgence, you reckon? And obviously we've got the Jack Doohan news. Again, we'll talk about that. But
yeah, Jack Doohan news was awesome. They've also got a brand new team director who's come on board for this weekend. Younger British guy.
Not French.
And I think that's...
This is why.
Yeah, 100%. That's a big move for them because... A young guy has been a team principal of sort of smaller categories, smaller teams in F3, I believe, and F2. So really good thing for him. Jack Doohan coming in as well. It's going to be a really bit of a shake-up for the team.
How good's that, though?
Yeah, it is really, really good. So super excited. He's Ollie last name something. I'm sorry, I've forgotten. But that's super exciting for them. And they need it. Like, they just need it. And Gasly, for the second year in a row, having a great, great, great race and in Zandvoort. So
is it a bit of a revival with Alpine? Have they found something?
Yeah, definitely. Because I think in qualifying as well, they found something. So definitely. And he held his own. Did a couple of great moves at outside of turn one. He made that his own last night at the race. So yeah, I mean, I think so. I mean, like, you got to remember back looking at Bahrain, we were what, 4 or 5 seconds behind the back of the pack, absolutely nowhere. So yeah, they've had a bit of resurgence. Man, you know who's really gone backwards though? Sauber, really, really gone backwards. They were a lap behind the field pretty much. So they're really waiting for that Audi coming through and just taking over. I think they've just stopped all development, it looks like. So
once you stop developing an F1, like, you go back so quickly.
Yeah, they're just going. It seems like they're just going through the paces. They haven't scored a point this year either. So, yeah, it's not looking good.
No, it's not. But it's good. It's really good to see Alpine having a crack again.
Yeah.
And then now Jack Doohan at the same time. How exciting! How many Aussies is that on the grid? It could potentially be what?
Three Aussies and Liam Lawson coming in.
A Kiwi.
Kiwi.
Yeah.
So they were saying, you know, like almost a quarter of the field is from the Oceanic. Part of the world. So,
something in the water?
Well, it's super exciting. I mean, Martin Brundle was saying on the coverage that when he started, there was 13 Italians who raced in Formula One. Now, in saying that, there was 39 cars on the grid, so it's a bit of a different thing. But you know, and then we've got no Italians except maybe Kimi Antonelli coming
through
next year.
We've spoken about this a few times. I don't know if we've actually spoken about this on the pod, to be honest, but we've spoken about Daniel that traditionally in the past, well, let's say 25 years, there hasn't been many Italians on the grid. Well, Giovinazzi, I think, was one.
Giovinazzi, I mean, Jano Trulli going Trulli, back yep. a bit further. But really, not really a lot to stand out.
So and championship
Giancarlo
threats.
Fisichella, your boy.
Italian. I always thought he was Spanish for some reason. Yeah, there you go, Giancarlo. Italian.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, there's probably been three in the last 20 years, I say. But, yeah, I mean, they used to be a powerhouse. And
not a lot.
Same thing with MotoGP is a funny one because there are, you know, three hot Italians in the main field.
There's always been more Italians in MotoGP yeah, and but two-wheel
not,
riding.
There's not a lot of young talent coming through. So it's interesting. Very interesting.
Mm.
Very interesting. So, yeah, start of the race, I was flabbergasted. They said no winner from pole in the last six races.
Mm.
And that never really happens in Formula One. It's been years and years and years. So as soon as Verstappen got that lead, I was really interested to see. I said, I reckon Lando is going to come back. He's going to get his tyres right.
That's funny you said that, and I was watching it thinking, oh, I reckon Verstappen's going to run away with this.
I just couldn't believe the domination from Norris. Like, it was crazy. And we'll talk about this in our performance of the week later. But, yeah, I mean, 22 seconds.
We might as well get into it now. Our MJ trading cards performance of the week has to be Lando Norris and the revival of McLaren.
Of McLaren, I know. Like, it's just incredible. And to do it so convincingly, it's the first time since Hamilton in Jeddah 2021 that someone other than Verstappen has won by over 10 seconds.
Wow. And I think it's the longest, biggest win this year.
Yeah.
It's just beaten Verstappen's race win. So
just crazy.
So the revival of McLaren has been building.
Yeah.
It has been building over maybe the last couple of years, but now it's easily the best car on the grid.
Easily. Yeah.
And I think Martin Brundle said in the coverage, if it wasn't for Verstappen, Red Bull would be in a whole world of hurt, which we've been saying for a while now as well.
Yeah, yeah. Perez had a tiny little bit of a revival, but
he had a better weekend.
He's still getting dominated by Verstappen easily.
That's fair enough. And you know what? Like, I would rather have an Oscar Piastri in my team anyway.
Yeah, 100%. And we'll see what happens next year with that. It looks like Liam Lawson has that seat. So a bit of a watch this space. But you know what? At the start of the race, I was thinking to myself, it actually is so good seeing the likes of a Max Verstappen in not the most dominant car.
It's so exciting. It's so exciting.
It's so exciting because you know he is the fastest man on the grid.
With so much experience.
So much experience. But it's just unbelievable. This car, even 6 months ago, was like unstoppable.
Mm.
Tire wear was just
not even 6 months ago, man. 3 months ago.
Was unstoppable.
90 days ago.
They were talking that, you know, they were going to win every race.
Yeah.
Like,
we were talking that.
Tire wear wasn't even a thing. And now, like, he gets on the radio within 10 laps and he's like, my front left's dead, this. And then the power of that McLaren passing him, like, their closing speed was just insane.
Yeah.
So, really interesting. And me and Mark Danby, Bandana Man, friend of the pod, we had a bet on Sports Bet about 2 months ago that Lando Norris to win five races this year.
Yeah,
this is just after Miami, and we got on it. It's $15 to one, and it's now at $1.75.
Oh wow! What? How many has he won now? Is that
two.
Second?
Yeah. Yeah, but I mean, like, you know, there's what 10 races left. I mean, if he doesn't, it's going to be a real surprise. So that actually, viewers from home, give us a bit of feedback. We thought of thinking about doing maybe a bit of a betting segment. We're like, not for everyone, obviously, but a little bit of feedback from that would be good. Betting for us isn't a big thing. We also, I don't love the constant betting commercials and stuff sport. Well,
yeah, as you know for myself, I don't gamble.
No, James doesn't gamble, drink or smoke. It's amazing.
Basically, just about, except for the Patreon episode I drink, and that's really it, MotoGP.
He doesn't have much vices except running on concrete, but everyone's different.
Yeah, it's called depression.
But yeah, I mean, and the other thing is, like, what we can't go past is Lando Norris qualifying lap, like four tenths ahead of the field. I mean, yeah, he made Oscar look, the big gap. You know,
but he should though.
He should, yeah.
He's the lead driver. He's got, how many years has he been in the grid now?
Yeah, five, six, true.
That's fair enough.
I thought Oscar was a little slightly disappointing.
To get fourth.
Yeah, I think he had a 10-lap tyre advantage against Leclerc at the end and couldn't pass him, so that was kind of...
They left him out for a long time, though.
Yeah, they left him out for a long time. He sailed past Russell and then came up to the back of Charles and just couldn't get close to him. Couldn't get him within a second of him.
I think that was just a good stint by Charles. Credit where credit's due. He was driving race-winning pace on some old tyres, and I thought that's actually more impressive than Piastri being more disappointing.
Great call. And I think he stuck with Piastri in the first stint as well. It was amazing because... Yeah. They were hanging on for the front guys for dear life.
Probably an underrated drive actually by Charles. Not enough people I think talk about that.
Actually, great call and drove
around that car
and close to performance of the week as well.
Yeah, if it wasn't for how dominant McLaren was, which is awesome and great to see, but realistically, he really did drive around that car. Mm. Like Ferrari hasn't been the hottest thing in the part this year, really.
No, and I mean
that was one of his better performances.
It's crazy watching it though, James, because like we got to Australia, Sainz won.
It's they've won that past few, haven't and they?
Then,
Ferrari,
and then they come to Monaco, Charles won, and Ferrari was the next big thing, and then boom, just the papaya seller just comes through and has been dominating. And who knows what happened with Red Bull if they had to take something off the car? I mean, they must have. I mean, it's just. It just has gone from the absolute dominant machine to not. So a couple of hard like stories of the weekend. Williams brought all these new upgrades. Logan Sargeant puts it in the wall, FP3, destroys the car. And there's word that Sargeant's out after Monza, rumours today. So we'll see what happens with that. This sucks, but qualifying, Alex Albon got excluded in qualifying. It was like half of a quarter of a millimeter. The floor was too low or too, I think it was too low to the ground. So like the team principal was just saying, he's just got to slice that little bit off and it would have been fine. So that sucks for them, but you can't have a tiny leeway here and there. Yeah, rules.
We saw that in Spa. The car being, Mercedes being overweight. You know, if there's a line, you just can't go over that line. It is what it is.
You can't go over the line. And that's motorsport and that's all sport. You got to have rules and you got to abide by the rules. Mm. So I 100% agree with that. But, yeah, I mean, it's an interesting time. And I think that definitely it's McLaren's time now.
Is it now becoming – I don't really – McLaren's been in the doldrums for, what, the past 15 years?
Yeah.
I heard you and I used to make fun of you all the time. I go, Tom, how's McLaren going to go this year in F1? And you go, Jim, they're coming back. They're going to be winning. You would say it every year. They're going to have these new upgrades.
Yeah.
And then they did nothing. They've always done nothing. They had that freakish win with Ricciardo, Monza?
Yeah, I mean, great memory, Jim. That's a really good memory. Yeah, that was the freak win, but they've just been... Bahrain last year, they came through the year and they were nowhere, absolutely nowhere. They brought upgrades throughout the year and they were, a podium finishing team by the end of the year. Mm. So that shows how good the team is to grow and make the right moves, make the right decisions with their upgrades. They brought a car this year, pretty good car. It's just got better and better and better. Where it's tough to say Red Bull's got worse.
Yeah, they've gone downhill.
So
Ferrari's probably just been stagnant.
Ferrari's got stagnant. I think they've stayed stagnant. Everyone's got a better. Mercedes obviously is taking points off Ferrari as well. So you have to look at Mercedes have got
they've
got
been better. More of a roller coaster, if anything.
They made some bad decisions in the race. They pitted both their guys, with 20 laps to go and put them on the soft tyre. The just pace wasn't there. So that's hard luck for them because they actually had not a bad weekend with Russell. He's in a good position. He probably almost could have got that third spot on the grid, but the undercut was always going to be strong there as well.
But it just makes me think, when was the last time McLaren was championship level? Mid-2000s?
Yeah, against the shoe? they won it with Hamilton in 2008.
Oh, yeah, of course championship. They did too, yeah.
And then they really dropped downhill. 2009, obviously Braun dominated. 2010s when Red Bull came in and started dominating.
And there was a newer type cars then as well.
That's correct. And then Mercedes came and dominated for years, and now Red Bull's dominated. So they haven't, they just haven't been there. But
it was always a shame when I used to see McLaren down the back. Remember when Alonso was driving for them? It was just...
I know. And they're such a power. Same as Williams. You got to remember, like, we grew up with Williams have been terrible.
Yeah.
You know, they won one race since we've even watched Formula One. But back in the 80s and 90s, mate, they were, you know, they were one of the best teams, second on the grid after McLaren for a lot of years as well.
Who was Williams back in the early 2000s? Who was driving for them?
Because
it was BMW Sauber.
BMW Sauber.
But that wasn't under Williams though, was it?
No, that's a, yeah, what's...
Wasn't that a Williams? Wasn't that all under one thing?
I'm not sure. No, because BMW Sauber...
Oh, am I going crazy?
Well, I know, like, they used to have, like, obviously Bottas and they had Pastor
Maldonado. I'm thinking, 2005.
Pastor Maldonado. I think it's because what that BMW Sauber was a... God, now you're getting me... I can't think myself.
I'm looking it up, unless you got something, Curdy. 2005 Williams F1 car. It's the HP BMW. That's it, BMW.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, Nick Heinfeld.
Yeah, Nick and Mark Webber. So was that all under one group, was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
I thought so.
Because they had the same...
It was BMW Williams F1 team.
Yeah, okay. And then BMW must have gone to Sauber because there was a BMW Sauber team as well.
Yeah.
People at home probably thinking, oh my God, these guys don't know fucking anything.
Yeah, probably, but what are you going to do? That's why we're podcasters.
So BMW took over Williams. Of course, BMW Williams, far out. We should know this. Took over from 2000 to 2005.
Yeah, I thought so.
Yeah, and then they had a good run. Like Robert Kubica came in after that and they went to Cosworth Engines 2006. Nico Rosberg and Mark Webber raced for them. And then Jenson Button was going to sign for them and didn't sign for them. And then they went to Toyota Engines they went to and then...
I love that era of F1 when you had like Ferrari, Toyota, BMW, McLaren. That was cool.
Well,
remember Jaguar?
Jaguar, yeah. Mark Webber raced for Jaguar. Yeah,
vomited in his helmet.
I remember they were great years. Big brands coming through, and I think that's going to be 2026. I'd love to see.
I think it's coming back.
I'd love to see Toyota back on the grid because it's like, I mean, it's the biggest car company in the world.
Yeah.
Hyundai is talking of an F1 team, but. You just got to look at the marketing. Like, is it really worth it? Like, if they win an F1 race, is people going to buy more Hyundais? Who knows?
You know what, though?
It's good brand building. You know what?
I actually do think so.
Yeah, okay.
I do think so. I reckon, like, look at all the teenies now that love F1.
Yeah.
If you've got, just say, Lewis Hamilton selling it Hyundai, you don't think they're not going to buy
Hyundai? Yeah, you're right. No, I would. 100%. I would. It's brand building. That's what it is. Yeah. Like, it's... And it's legitimacy. A lot of people would think like a South Korean brand, you know, not quality, but like, oh, they're in Formula One. Mm. So that's a good point. It's a really good point. On that note, though, I'm really interested to see how Ford and Red Bull are going to go.
Yeah.
Joint partnership going through to 2026 because it's just two different worlds colliding. So, and Ford have never really done much in Formula One for a long, long time. So we're going to really see.
When did they normally do it? When were they in F1?
Oh, they produced... engines back.
I thought,
in the early days.
Like the 90s, early 90s or something.
I think
like that.
Cosworth's owned by Ford as well.
Yeah.
I believe so, yeah. We're blabbering through this pod at the moment.
That sounds about right. going back to the race, though, you know what I like? I like Zandvoort, the track.
Oh, yeah.
It reminds me of like an old school 70s track. Like it's not really well manicured.
No service roads.
Yeah, it's a bit grubby.
Yeah.
I liked it. It was cool to... I forgot it was kind of like that, so...
Yeah, it's interesting. It's...
a bit more old school.
They redeveloped it a couple of years ago and they made that banking even more.
Yeah.
And it was interesting to see before the race because they had a segment on that. I'm like, why are they doing the banking? It's so you can have a higher speed coming onto the straight.
Yeah.
So it's not as stop and start.
Which better for F1.
For F1. You can also get a slipstream. Like for a tighter corner, you can go faster. So you can get a higher slipstream as well. So it is interesting how they've done it. And if they didn't have that bank corner in the last corner, there would be no passing. I
was going to say, it would ruin the track.
Yeah, 100%.
Because it's not a massive, massive front straight, really. But they get a bit of a slingshot out of there where they can.
Yeah, it's a short, very short front straight. But yeah, they get a slingshot out of the back, and it seems like they really do slipstream around sort of corner, flats corners is quite prominent because there's a lot of aero coming off the front of the car. So you get even a stronger slipstream. So I kind of like the track. It was when Verstappen passed Norris at the start of the race, I was thinking, I might have had the thing in the back of my mind thinking, oh God, this is going to be hard to pass. But, whoa, geez.
And Hamilton went through like five drivers
in the first
10, 15 laps.
Now, a couple of interesting little things, Jimmy boy. Haas apparently aren't allowed to leave the Netherlands at the moment.
Why? What's going on?
So Haas team's assets, including their cars, motorhomes, racing equipment, are all stuck in the Netherlands due to a legal dispute with their former sponsor. Now, the former sponsor famously was backed by Mazepin.
Nikita Mazepin, the Russian driver.
The Russian driver. So they dropped the Russian sponsor and the Russian driver when the war started.
Okay.
And I can't pronounce it. Uracali, I think, is the sponsor. So. Yeah. They actually entered the paddock with, I think, like their lawyers and stuff, and issued a statement to Haas and said, "You got to come up with the sponsorship money." And the courts ruled that they can't leave, and they got Monza this weekend, so that's going to be an interesting thing. So I think we'll find out more probably at the moment or tonight when everything wakes up and everything seems to happen. But yeah, it was a bit of an interesting thing.
Not the first time I've heard of a team get stuck at the airport. You remember when? The cartel held up the MotoGP grid in Argentina.
Yes, when was this?
A couple of years ago. I don't know if many people know this.
Yeah, it's an interesting story.
It's a very interesting story where, the listeners, I'm sure a lot of them don't know, but I think it was when we had delay to, remember it was Argentina, we had a delay and we had Friday, they missed Friday or something like that.
It's because
the GP had to pay the cartel to get all their... their freight and everything through the airport and everything like that, because the cartel own all of South America. But they kept that so hush hush, which is so crazy.
It's crazy.
A really interesting thing.
So they had to like pay him off to let them race.
Oh, they just sent Jorge Martin in there and marched him in.
That's crazy.
It's probably why they're not back in South America anymore.
Now, also, talks of obviously Liberty Media buying MotoGP, as we have spoken about many times on this podcast.
Yeah, what's the go there? That to sell some assets or something to buy GP?
So apparently Liberty are selling a portion of Formula One, $600 million worth, to fund the MotoGP purchase. So that's interesting. So another business is going to come in and purchase a share of Formula One. I don't think it's going to change things at all.
I don't think so either. I think that's just like corporate business world shenanigans.
But it was an interesting thing how the world works with that, with those finances things. And I think it's a great move from Liberty, and we've spoken about this many times. So, and we're very, very excited to see what's going to be happening in the future with that.
If anyone wants to sponsor us by $600 million, we will buy a portion of F1 and really make some proper changes.
On that note, what changes would you make, James?
I'd probably put like gravel on the track. I'll put a rally section in there.
Well,
I would bring back cigarette sponsors.
Yeah, okay.
It would be more revenue into the sport. I'd get that $600 million back in an instant.
I think that
I'd bring back the V10 engines in all seriousness.
Yeah. Well, there's talk of that. 2030, they're talking about creating this fully sustainable fuel, man-made fuel. There are talks of it going back to a really loud formula. So we're super. I mean that'll make everything better again, won't it?
What, you know, when we've talked about with this with MotoGP, they came in and brought like standard ECUs in.
Yeah.
Transform Sport.
Yeah.
Is that similar in F1? Do you know of?
Not
with
really.
The electronics, or is it their own development?
It's their own development. They've got. I don't think anything is shared on that car except the rear rain light. That's the only part that all the teams get the same of.
And the TV camera.
the TV camera. Yeah. So everything, and that's what's crazy about Formula One, is there is millions and millions and millions of dollars goes into developing these cars. They've all got, a lot of them have different engines, different aerodynamic, and they seem to be all very close.
I know, it's nuts.
Like, it is crazy. Yeah. Like, there are, you know, and we're going to talk about our closest Formula One seasons and our most one-sided MotoGP seasons in a sec. But it is crazy that a whole year can go past, and it's a very rare occasion where a team, it's quite rare that a team would absolutely dominate a year.
Yeah,
it's only happened. It's only happened probably out of the last 40 years, probably 6 or 7 seasons that a team's absolutely dominated and won nearly every race. So, but yeah, it's interesting. Interesting. On that, do you want to jump into that, our little segment we've got today?
Yeah, so well, I guess the past few weeks we've talked about how MotoGP is, I shouldn't say turned one-sided, but
It's
predictable, and I guess it's more one-sided of the manufacturers, because you still got Bastianini to an extent, Martin and Bagnaia fighting it out, and you're still never really going to know who's going to win. But it's one-sided in the fact that it's going to be a GP24 that's winning that title. And on the flip side, we're talking about how F1's now so close and getting closer than ever. So I thought, let's dive back in and have a chat of the most one-sided MotoGP seasons of all time and the closest Formula One seasons of all time. Because it's kind of flipped, MotoGP was so close for so long. Even though we still had a dominant champions, the racing and everything was so close, but now the GP24s are dominant and now F1's just really closing back up.
Yeah. Yeah, it is really interesting, and it seems like it's always one or the other, and I think that's all through the years. They really both haven't been super exciting at the same time. Maybe 2021's the difference with MotoGP and also Formula One being both so close and such a crazy championship. So you go first, James.
All right. So super one-sided championships. There's been a few out there, and it's funny because when I picked this, I didn't realize, but they're all from the one team. Can you guess what that team is?
Ducati.
No, Honda. Repsol Honda.
Oh.
Repsol Honda has dominated. When they've dominated the season, they've really dominated the season. Now, I'm not really going to do this in particular order, but the main ones I've got, and I'll go through each one, is McDoon's 1997 season. Just for example, it was first, first, second, first, 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 second, DNF. And he DNF'd in Australia in the last rounds.
That's right. He crashed Southern Loop, or was it? No, turn one, wasn't it?
Turn one.
Yeah, and that's why it's called do it. Well, it was always going to be doing it. It was corner, but yeah.
Valentino Rossi's 2002 season, first, second, first, 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 DNF, first, first, second, second, first, second. DNF'd in the Czech Republic.
Bruno.
So that was the first year of the four strokes.
Yeah.
So it was half four stroke, half 500cc. Gotcha.
Yep. And he was on a four stroke.
Yeah. And that's when HRC just, threw the kitchen sink at making the best bike. Year after, 2003. Valentino Rossi again, first, 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 second, first, 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 first.
What?
Yeah.
Bro, you know how we talked about the other...
He finished second. He almost won every single race. That's probably the most dominant season ever.
It is the most dominant season ever.
He only got 1 second.
That's what?
Yeah, and then got first every... He didn't even have a DNF.
No way.
And that's when he went to Yamaha the next year after doing that. And Honda said, anyone can win on this bike. Crazy.
Bro, that is like the Rossi tards, as Danby would say. Mm. This is why he's such a figure.
Yeah.
Because no one's done that before and no one will do it probably ever again.
Nah.
And yes, Marquez is a dominant figure in the sport, but that GOAT conversation is just a real interesting one. And sometimes you just got to sit back and look at these stats because... I'm sure a lot of people at home wouldn't have actually realized that. I'm sure a lot of people know that, but a lot of people have probably forgotten that.
They do, and I didn't realize it. To be fair, I didn't realize that. He only got 1 second that whole... It's unbelievable, man. That 1 second was at Catalunya, which it was another Honda that won anyway.
He didn't crash once in a race all year. No. Like, that doesn't happen now.
Nah, it doesn't. It doesn't. Mark Marquez's 2019 season, second, first, DNF, first, second, first. More racing, you got to remember. In those later years, there's more tracks.
Yeah.
But still, he lowest he finished was second.
Yeah.
Without taking a DNF.
Crazy.
Taking a DNF out. And the other one was Casey Stoner's 2011 season, first year in a Repsol Honda. First DNF when he got taken out by Valentino Rossi.
Oh, in Jerez.
Yeah. Third, first, second, third, 350 points.
Jeez, it really came in strong, didn't he?
Yeah. So Repsol Honda, if they're going to dominate a season, they're going to really dominate a season.
So it wasn't all Repsol Honda then, because Valentino Rossi's first season at Yamaha, you said, was the most dominant.
No, that was all Honda. 2003, 2002, that's both
Honda. Oh, they're Honda. So yeah. 2004, he went to Yamaha. Yeah. Sorry, yeah, of course.
Which he had another dominant season, but just wasn't to that
extent.
Yeah.
I'm going to go a different route to talk about the closest Formula One finishes. I'm going to talk about the last race of the season and why it was so close. So the closest championship in the history was Niki Lauda. 72 points.
Okay.
And Alain Prost, 71.5 points.
Jesus, 0.5.
Yeah, so half a point. So that season there was, I believe, a rained out race where they rewarded half points.
Okay.
So that's the closest in history.
Yeah.
Okay. And then this is no particular order because they're all the same amount. Second, Michael Schumacher. 92 points.
Yeah.
Damon Hill, 91 points. The 1994 season.
Yeah.
Famously, Australian Grand Prix, last race of the season. Schumacher hit the wall on the outside of turn four, comes back on the track, and then swerves into Damon Hill in the next corner, and they're both out.
Mm.
And Michael Schumacher wins the championship. The third and probably one of my most fondest memories in Formula One.
Let me guess, 2021.
No. No, 2021 is actually not on this list because it was a very close battle and it was the closest title in history. But points-wise, Verstappen actually won by, he won the championship by 3 or 4 points.
Yeah.
So anyway, we'll talk, that's an honourable mention. Third, 2007 Formula One season. Kimi Raikkonen, 110 points. Lewis Hamilton and Fernando Alonso, 109 points.
Yeah.
So Kimi Raikkonen had to win that last race and Hamilton and Alonso had to finish, I think it was 6th or 7th in arrears, and it happened. One of the most amazing races in history.
That was at Brazil, race?
That was in Brazil in the last race.
That was the last year before the change of regulations, and then 2008 they went to... Was that 2007?
No, 2008 the regulations didn't change too much.
Oh, okay. Was it 2009?
2009 when Braun came in.
Gotcha.
Fourth. James Hunt, 69 points, nice. Breakfast of Champs. Niki Lauda, 68 points. That famous 1976 season, obviously we all know that from the movie Rush, where Niki Lauda pitted on, I think it was with 20 laps to go because the rain was just too strong, and James Hunt continued and won the championship. To this day, probably one of the craziest seasons in F1 history. As we all know, Niki Lauda had that crazy accident in the Nürburgring, the Nordschleife. Was out for like 3 or 4 races with Burns. So
that was one and only James Hunt. He only won one title. Yeah.
Yep.
Talk about just go off topic for a second. Like, talk about just two personality clashes.
Oh, I know.
And that's what always makes a bitter rival. Is two people that are so different.
Yeah, they're so different, and became good mates by the end.
It's always the way though. Like Senna and Prost. Like I think Prost was one of the pallbearers.
Yep.
So it's interesting. Maybe not Marc Marquez and Valentino Rossi.
And not Hamilton and Verstappen.
Oh, you don't reckon?
Nah.
I reckon in 20 years' time, you never know.
Bro, Verstappen's like, he's just the lone wolf, you know, he doesn't care.
Mm.
But I suppose Niki Lauda was like that as well. And then another famous year, 2008, Hamilton's first championship. Up there with the worst nights on my Formula One watching experience.
How old? 2008, you would have been 14.
Year eight. Oh, God. So this Massa had to win the race. Hamilton had to finish 6th. He was 7th with a lap to go. Famously, Timo Glock. I think the the British press paid him off or something to slow down in the last corner of the last lap of the last race of the season. Hamilton passes him and wins the championship by a single point. It's just that famous scene of in the, you know, Ferrari pits and in the Ferrari pits and they're celebrating the championship. Massa's dad's, you know, hugging everyone. And then you got a mechanic comes past and goes, guys, Hamilton passed Glock with a lap to go, with a corner to go. And just the elation then turns to the McLaren.
Oh, my God. How did you feel?
Yeah. And Massa obviously never won a championship. There was talks last year he was actually going to sue.
Yeah, I remember.
Sue the Formula One because obviously he lost all those points in Singapore when the crash gate happened, where Nelson Piquet Jr. crashed on purpose and Alonso won.
Mm.
Massa had to pit when the safety car came out. They tried to refuel the car. The refueling Bowser didn't come out. He drove off with it and they had to retire the car. So, yeah, pretty wild year.
Yeah, that's nuts. That's I don't know why you would celebrate, though, until you know you've won.
Italians, bro. Come on, think about it. Too passionate. But you know what? Reading through these, like, it just gets the juices flowing. Yeah. Like, how good is motorsport?
You know what's funny? When I think about this, though, I love when someone still dominates. When someone just really stamps their authority on a championship, I think I love that.
Like, you got to appreciate it later, though. That's the thing.
When
you're not appreciating Bagnaia at the moment, surely.
No, but at least he's not dominating like what I just read out. An honourable mention I wanted to put in is 2014 Marc Marquez, second year in, first 10 races in a row.
Yeah, that was wild.
Even then, I appreciated that because I was just like, second year in, you know, how do you do that? How do you do that? And
that's like a Costa coming in next year and winning the first 10 races. Like, you couldn't even think that would happen.
I don't think I stand corrected, but I don't know if that can ever happen again.
I don't think so. I think there's just too much racing now as well with the sprint race. Something's bound to go wrong.
Probably as well, you know, we're just finishing up that, I believe, that CRT era. So yeah. I really don't think the capability of riders were there as what they are now. But in saying that, like, my point is...
Yeah.
It's the flip side's great as well. Seeing domination like Valentino did or Mick did, you got to really appreciate that. And seeing someone win like 10 races in a row or just only getting seconds.
Yeah, I know.
It's incredible.
It is.
And like even when I saw Verstappen last year and he dominated, there was still sometimes there's still a little bit of me. I'm like, oh, just win the next one. Like just win the next one because I like seeing the domination.
That's psychotic, but I like it. And it's good. It is true though. And like we looked at... there's people along the years who really appreciate that. And, like, your old man the same. Mm. Like, loved Marquez, winning all those races, winning all those championships. And I just, like, I always go for the underdog.
Mm.
And I was like,
they get good again.
I know. It's crazy. It's just wild. But
That's psychotic.
I really thought Marquez would have won a race by now. But we'll see. Let's jump into hot takes.
Hot takes.
Because there's a lot of like what we're talking about in the hot takes as well.
And you're taking over hot takes this episode.
Yeah, I know. I'm a bit nervous.
It's a big responsibility, mate.
Very big responsibility. So thank you, James.
It's good.
You've stamped your authority on this over the last few weeks.
I like actually not knowing it, to be honest.
That's what I think. I wanted to get your fresh opinion on this because you have got an opinion on a lot of different things. All right, let's start off with Luke Miller_6. Thanks, Luke.
Hey, could be a number one ticket holder, this fellow. He's liking commenting on all that stuff.
Yeah, that's very true. It's Cold Papa's probably got a bit of a he's moved in pretty quick, but at the moment, so we're gonna play the cards right.
Yeah, we're gonna keep him on edge, but
we do. We're gonna keep him on edge. And thank a special mention again, it's Cold Papa. We'll read out one of his beautiful responses, but he gave us our Formula One standings as well.
Yeah.
So he's gone through. He's just amazing. Anyway, Aldeguer from Luke Miller. Aldeguer will finish 10th to 12th in MotoGP next year and have a good season. He's still fast.
This is from Luke Miller?
This is from Luke Miller.
Look, that's probably a good shout. 10th to 12th, I think, is probably a good shout because he'll be on a GP24.
Mm.
10 to 12 because I don't
GP24 yes.
On a Gresini, I assume.
So you got to think about this. There's going to be less Ducatis next year. There's only going to be six of them. So if he's the worst, if Ducati dominate again and he's the worst Ducati, he'll still finish 12th in the championship.
There's only four on the grid, six on the grid, sorry.
I don't think so. I don't think that's going to happen. I don't think even if he's not going to be, is he going to be better than all the other Ducati riders?
Nah, he will be.
So if he's still the, if he's a worst Ducati rider out of all six of them.
So who do we got? We got Bagnaia, Marquez.
Yep.
We've got Digia, Morbidelli.
Yep.
And we've got Alex Marquez and Fermín Aldeguer.
So even if he finishes, you know, if he, let's see, who knows?
I don't know. That's a tough one, man. Like if he's going to knock anyone off, it's probably Morbidelli and Alex Marquez. But Alex Marquez can still put it like fifth.
Yeah, that's the thing.
And same with Morbidelli on a good race where his head's right.
It's, how many are on the grid? 22?
Yeah.
Okay, so you got to take four out of that, four Hondas, four Yamahas next year.
Mm.
All right, so he's probably going to finish ahead of them.
Take Miguel Oliveira out, he'll do nothing.
He'll do nothing.
Well, he's on a Yamaha now.
Yeah, he's on a Yamaha. So he's got to finish ahead of probably at least two Aprilias, and he's got to finish ahead of probably two KTM riders.
Yeah.
Who knows? It's a really good hot take, though, because it is a really hard one to pick.
It's very much the unknown.
Yeah.
Because you look at Quartararo as a great example. He didn't light the world on fire.
Yeah.
In Moto2, won a couple of races, and they promoted him, and he had one of the best rookie seasons you're going to see.
Yeah, so, on a Petronas. Yeah, definitely.
So you don't know.
All right, next one is Sean AK underscore 28. Would Yamaha and Honda quit MotoGP seeing the one-sided domination of Ducati?
Nah, of course not. They've got too much. The Japanese have got too much pride.
Yep. Too much history.
They still develop their own motorcycles out of it.
Yep.
And look, Honda's been through the doldrums and Yamaha's still been through the doldrums and they'll come out of it. We've got the new regulations in, 2027?
Yep.
They'll just stick fat and they'll do it. Japan. Honda is looking to move some of their headquarters for their development in Europe, though. Yeah, they've got a space there and then they want to do another space, I think, in Italy. So yep. They are making big moves and we already know they're throwing the kitchen sink at putting in a new bike and developing a bike, and they're bringing a new brand new bike to Misano test. So they are making moves. It's just not the right moves yet, but it will come.
You know what's crazy, James? If I said to you like 5 years ago, or even 5 to 10 years ago, there will be a development in MotoGP where aerodynamics are going to be the number one thing.
Mm.
And the Italians are going to dominate that segment.
If you told me 10 years ago, I would have laughed in your face.
Yeah. It's just they built a bike that was powerful, could go straight.
Yeah.
Didn't corner as well, but under the right person, it
couldn't break.
Couldn't break. And you think Japan, like, you know, they're so calculated. Yeah,
strategic.
And like, it's, I know it's not all aero.
But I think a lot of, what's the right word where it's, when your development needs to take a lot of almost craziness to try something new.
Yeah, and outside the box sort of thing.
Yeah, Ducati did that and they were first to put winglets on 2015, 2016.
And KTM to a certain extent as well. They really think outside the box with some of their development parts.
Yeah.
All right, next one. Vorno Ando. right you are. In your opinion, expert opinion, I'll add that, who is going to be the next Australian to earn a MotoGP ride?
Ooh, it's out of two riders. It's that's a tough one, actually.
You're gonna have to say Senna Agius because he's already Moto2.
I do or don't.
No, I'm gonna say Senna Agius because I think he will have a great season next year, and then there'll be by the sounds of it, Dorna won an Australian in the MotoGP paddock. They're fighting for Miller to be there.
Yeah,
Miller has one more year left. You'd think.
It looks like it's all but done.
So if Senna has a dominant year next year, he could have a chance.
Yeah, he's got a chance. Yeah, you're probably right with Senna if he proves himself.
What he did in – I know he crashed, but what he did in Sachsenring this year was really impressive.
Yeah, it all just depends on next year. Jacob Rulestone's obviously doing really, really well as well.
But he's still got a few more years to go. And I think
– Kelso's next to move up to Moto2.
Kelso's next. He's got one more year in Moto3 if he has another good year. And a bigger bike will suit him as well. Obviously, we see that him going down the straights and just getting mauled. So, That's going to be an interesting one. Ride.savvy, Jack Miller would have made a great test ride instead of signing for Pramac Yami. Rumoured, in brackets.
It doesn't matter because you can still develop a bike if you're a full-time rider. So it doesn't really matter. He would be better as a full-time rider anyway, I think. He would be a good test rider.
Yep.
But you'd rather just have him on a full-time ride.
All right, we're going to go a little bit left field for the next one. NASCAR. So NASCAR has a playoffs instead of a championship. So you win or you place throughout the year and you go onto a points table and then have a playoff at the end of the year where it'll go down from, now I'm probably going to butcher this, but from 20 cars to 15 cars to 10 cars, and then they fight it out for 5 cars. And this is over a few week period. So Tay_Kenny05, Brocky05, NASCAR playoffs shouldn't exist. And I have to agree.
So what you're saying is just say they go to Talladega.
Yep.
And there's 5 cars on the track.
Yes.
And there's like 100,000 people in the stands just watching 5 cars.
Yes.
That doesn't make any sense to me.
It doesn't. And the other thing is a guy can absolutely dominate the season and win every race. And then he goes into the first week of the playoffs, gets turned around, spun, and then he's out.
Oh, nah, that's rude as, it's so man. Rough. That's rude as. No
it's,
way.
I know, it's crazy.
I don't believe in that. But that's interesting. It's such like an American thing to do.
Yeah, and you know why it's there? TV ratings.
Oh, yeah, of
it's
course.
It's all because of that. Yeah, and they can stretch the season out longer.
Of course.
They're going to get more viewers because they want to see who's going to win.
Yeah.
And it's all, and it's like that with like all sorts of stuff. Like the NBA, for instance, all about like timeouts. They brought all these timeouts so they can do a commercial break.
Yeah, same with the NFL.
Yeah.
Like an NFL game goes like 5 hours.
I know.
And then like 30 minutes of it is actually like action.
The only time
the rest of it's just Mountain Dew commercials and fried chicken.
The only NFL game going to is behind the glass in the corporate area because I couldn't sit in the stands for that long.
Well, mate, you go to any game like that. What are you talking about?
Yeah, true.
Sorry.
Yeah, he's flabbergasted. Look at him,
that's
James.
That's crazy. But it doesn't surprise...
Shocked that I picked her.
I wasn't thinking, Mr. President. I know you weren't.
You never do.
Gotta love him. It's a very Americanized. They don't call themselves world champions of motor racing, do they?
World championship ring. Like that's crazy. Yeah. That's for SOTY 21, you know what I'm saying?
World champion NBA basketball player.
Yeah. That is wild though.
Yeah. I do like NASCAR though. Like I would love to go to Talladega.
I have to admit, NASCAR is having a little bit of a, like, I was having this discussion with my boss who's a crazy Canadian who loves it. Like it's back in the limelight again, I feel. And this NASCAR, I don't know if you've watched it yet. They've got like
I watched a bit of it,
Netflix style.
It's really good.
And again, it just shows you like, dude, I want to know who's there. I want to know their personalities. I want to know what makes them tick. And that's what these series do. Now, I'm not the biggest fan of Drive to Survive. I haven't even watched the last season.
No, I haven't. Why?
So for me, yes, I know so much about these guys already.
Yeah.
But for the listener or the viewer who doesn't watch it every week, it's a great tool to watch it.
It is. And then like learning about NASCAR as well is, talk about aerodynamics. You wouldn't think there's a lot in NASCAR, but where they have to sit in that pack, like if they make the one wrong move, it spins them out and takes everyone else out. It's a whole thing. That's why they get so mad. It's literally a race of inches almost.
So yeah, there was a thing during the week, and I think I shared it, and we might share it on our feed. But they were saying Kyle Larson, who's a star in NASCAR, they've come out and said that he could, if he gave him 2 days in a Formula One car, he'd be as fast as Max Verstappen.
It's the biggest American thing.
That is the craziest thing I've ever heard in my life. Like the craziest. Yeah. And they're like, oh, if Max came to NASCAR, he wouldn't win.
Yeah, that's so ridiculous.
Ben Gisbergen comes first race and wins. Like, I know it's not in the oval, but like, bro, the Americans are crazy. Anyway,
I love that though.
The arrogance.
I love the arrogance and I love how bold they are.
And the other thing is,
that's how you sell a sport though.
True.
They're just selling a sport. Yeah, that's all they're doing.
It's all advertising. And the
Mountain Dew.
Fried chicken and watermelon. Van Gisbergen, on that note, has signed for a nationwide cup ride for next year, which is the big boys. He's only racing in the baby category.
So he's in actual NASCAR now. Yeah. He was in Xfinity or whatever it was.
The baby one. So he'll be in 2025. All right. D Silver 87S. Track limits suck. It should go curb, real grass, then gravel. and let them settle it like fucking men. Yeah. Couldn't agree more.
I love that. I love that.
It's not going to work on every track, though. That's the problem. There's a lot of tracks that share Formula One as well. You look at Austria now, all the runoffs now, just tarmac. So
gay.
Super, yeah, super homosexual.
Phillip Island's good because it's literally grass and gravel.
What we've always said is if a circuit has grass on the outside, it's a good circuit.
This is what we'll do with our $650 million with F1 tracks.
And you know what? We'll
bring grass back.
I have to admit, F1 has slowly brought this back where they have, like in Formula One at Austria, they had those little tiny sand traps on the corner of the thing. They took them away for the MotoGP. Yeah. So that was a cool sign, because if you go wide, you're in the sand. There's no
You don't want to have that room for error. You've got to have no margin for error. It's the whole point.
And I hate that rule where you go wide on the
last lap. Brad Binder's been caught out like four times. Yeah. Ridiculous. And like what he did wouldn't have changed the position.
No. And sometimes it's actually worse off.
Yeah, it is.
And I hate like if they ran wide, like in MotoGP, they ran wide and lose time, and then they still get a track limit.
Yeah, they've overcorrected the wrong way.
Standard Dorner. Jared.Madston, a very good friend of the pods. Part one, so this is in two parts. I'll just read
again, it. Could be another number one.
I'll just read it as one question, but he's done part two. Bahrain Grand Prix weekend, I told my old man that Doohan would get the Alpine seat. I thought the car was so bad the drivers would leave and no one else would want to be wanting to drive it. Very good pick up there, Jared. Well done on picking that, because I thought that as well. I thought he's done his stash. He did so well in F2. He's been a test driver. But for them to actually sign it is awesome. And they've had a little bit of a, resurrection, I suppose.
Yeah, it's good to see. And apparently...
less French as well is probably a good thing.
Yeah, it'd be better for everyone. Yeah. Apparently, only fans want to sign with them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Cool, perfect. That's cool. Love that. I love that shit, you know?
But it's that's a good pickup from Jared. And having Jack Doohan on the grid. How crazy is that, though? A MotoGP, five-time MotoGP world champion, and then the son's racing F1.
And I didn't realise how close Mick Doohan and Michael Schumacher were.
Oh, okay.
Really good mates. And that's...
I know he was a big MotoGP fan.
Yeah. And Michael Schumacher named his son Mick after Mick Doohan.
Oh, what?
Yeah, crazy. And they were best mates. Or they still are best mates, I should say. So
clip that.
Hanging on by a thread.
That's really, really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, really interesting. So I always thought it was just like a derivative from Michael, but it actually is named after Mick Doohan. So,
well, he's got the racing pedigree, that's for sure.
And the other little tidbit I might add is Michael Schumacher bought Jack Doohan his first go-kart.
Yeah, right.
So he's the reason why he's into cars and not bikes. So it's cool. It's a, big
circle.
Big circle. And the other thing was Mick Schumacher was... he had the chance for that seat as well. So it's amazing how the world works.
Yeah, isn't that funny?
Let's do this one. B_Rothberg_. Liam Lawson will perform worse in that Williams than Logan Sargeant is currently? ?
Nah, I don't think anyone can perform worse than Logan Sargeant in that car. I think Curdy behind a computer can drive faster.
I totally disagree with Rothberg. Must be American. because Liam Lawson came in last...
Sorry, we're going to cut to a commercial break. Mountain Dew and fried chicken.
That's going good. Liam Lawson came in last year and raced... he came in at Zandvoort, and I will never forget this. He came out in that race and it started raining and he was on soft tyres. I think it was either in qualifying or the race, and he had to put a lap in or something, and he did amazing. Yeah. Like, his first time in the car.
Yeah, yeah.
So... you got to remember, like, he came into Zandvoort after he came straight into the qualifying session, no practice, because Ricardo hurt his hand. So he had to go in first lap of qualifying, started raiding.
Never been in that car.
He's on soft tyres and makes it to the Q2.
Yeah.
That's crazy. Impressive. Like, bro, Sargeant in the wall in practice, do your maths.
With new upgrades, ruined everything. James Vowles is crying.
Bro, the whole car went on fire. Anyway, shit won that one, Rothberg. We'll see you next week. 13_ Big Mac. That's what we're having for dinner. 13 Big Macs. The Moto2 world champion from each year should automatically get into MotoGP. Maybe we'll save the worst till last, eh?
That's a tough one. They almost should automatically go in, but
the logistics just doesn't work because the team's got to take them on.
Sponsors as well. Like Idemitsu ain't taking anyone. It's not Japanese.
Yeah, exactly. Like, how do you pick which team? Like, do they do a, you know, revolving each year? You have to take the rider or something.
Yeah, imagine if you land on Honda.
Yeah,
you know, next year you'd sandbag and win it next year and go factory Ducati.
They'd purposely lose the championship.
Yeah, they would.
No, that wouldn't work, but it's a nice thought.
Like, they should get the chance to sign a contract.
Yep.
But sometimes I've seen riders turn that down because there's just no good rides.
Yeah.
I think Zarco did that.
Well, you know what? And credit where credit's due, we touched on this last week. Iagura just waiting and waiting and waiting and waiting for the right spot. I reckon he had this planned out years ago.
Yeah, definitely. Like, he obviously saw it from afar that he didn't want to ride that Honda.
Yeah.
And why would you?
I know. It's and he's got the good ride in the Aprilia. So Lachlan.Boyle, thoughts on the Marquez brothers using Honda CBR600s as training bikes and not Ducatis?
Gather another number one ticket holder in
Lockie?
In question.
Yep.
Yeah, I did see that. That was funny.
Mm.
But what else are they going to use? The V2 panties.
Yeah. Equivalent bike.
Maybe the 600s work better on those little tiny tracks because they're racing them around little small tracks.
How are they letting, though? Like, it's like Bagnaia going to a track and racing on a Honda. That just doesn't sound right, does it?
Yeah, I think it's a hot take. Yeah.
It's a hot take. I mean, I'll give it to him.
It's interesting, but they do that with dirt bikes as well when they ride motocross.
Mm.
Like, Bagnaia couldn't ride a Ducati for a long time. They always rode KTMs.
Joseph Musa _. Mark Marquez comes out with the most points from now till the end of the flyaways.
No way, man. GP24 is dominating. Mark Marquez is amazing, but he's just not quick enough. The bike's not quick enough. You gotta change your way of thinking now from MotoGP for the next few seasons. It's more about the bike.
Yeah.
You know, you can't ride around it like you could. And he's having amazing results, but he's not gonna beat Bagnaia and Martin. He might take out Bastianini, maybe, but...
And we are the first to put our hand up and we didn't think this was going to happen.
No one saw this coming.
So
when we had an interview with Chris Vermeulen.
He said he was going to dominate, win the championship. Yep. So, it's Cold Papa. You're our boy.
Yep.
Hot take, Lando is going to lose the championship by near to 30 points. So what Papa's saying, he's going to come back and lose it by probably a race win.
How many points is he down now?
Oh, Curdy, can you get the 2024 F1 Championship
current
Wikipedia page up, please?
Current F1 standings. 2004 F1 standings.
oh, goodness.
Is it... I think it's around 70 points still, isn't it? Or 60 points or something? Is it that much? Or 50 points? This is, here we go.
This is not Curtis's strong point, but it's all right.
What do we got? What do we got, Curdy?
So currently, Verstappen's at 295 points. Norris is at 225.
Okay, so it's still,
What's the difference there?
70?
Yeah, 70 points.
Oh, yeah, I was on
still a lot.
That's a lot.
After that, it's Charles Leclerc.
We've got to remember, he only got 7
Thanks,
points.
Curdy.
Thanks, Curdy. He only got 7 points on him on the weekend.
True.
So.
True. That's what, like, that's 3 race wins, really.
Mm.
3 race wins to 3 DNFs.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's actually a pretty good shout. You know what? That's a good shout.
Well done.
It's called Papa.
Puppy. And that concludes hot takes for this week.
You did well, mate.
Yeah, thank you. That was fun.
You did well.
Yeah. Didn't butcher it.
What do we got this week? We've got Aragon and Monza.
Aragon and Monza. So very, very, very
excited. We've got a double header.
Double header. Hopefully they do what they usually do and make the MotoGP a little bit earlier. I think it won't affect things too much because the race is going to be at 10 o'clock anyway and we'll finish by the time Monza starts. Yeah. So,
what's your early predictions for Monza?
Yeah, it's going to be, looks like, man, like seeing that McLaren. Okay, 3 things. McLaren performs under the high speed corners. Second thing. Does so good on its tyres. And third thing, how we saw it motor down the straight and pass Verstappen on one of the shortest straights of the year. So they've got the full...
That was one of its weak points only a year ago, wasn't it? Crazy. Its top speed.
It just seems to like when something clicks, everything clicks. And it's the same with like with Red Bull. Red Bull's not performing at the moment. So now their tyre wear's even worse. Things just happen because you're pushing the car harder, that sort of thing. So very interesting.
I'm really looking forward to it.
Mm.
I'm really looking... I love Monza. What a great track.
Yeah, I know. It's going to be awesome. What a weekend. And back at Aragon. Excited about that as well.
Yeah, back at Aragon.
Hopefully another last lap battle with Bagnaia and someone.
Traditionally, there's some good racing in Aragon.
I'm going to go on Marquez win.
Jeez.
Yep, I reckon Marquez is going to win.
Lock it in?
Because that toes two long left-handers. He loves a left-hander. It's such a Marquez track.
It is. I think he's going to get like a third or something like that. I think it's just going to be... I've said it's going to be Bagnaia and Martin.
Okay.
GP24 domination. Oh, you know what? I reckon might do well. Pedro Acosta. I reckon he's going to come out firing this weekend.
Home track?
Yeah, in Spain. Spain. It's going to be good.
Española.
I'm very excited. Very excited.
Cool. Thanks, Jimmy. Got anything else for us?
That's all I got.
Beautiful.
Yeah, we'll be back next week.
And then we'll hopefully have a Patreon out soon, so get on board with that, guys. Appreciate it.
And we're just gearing up for MotoGP. Make sure you come say g'day to us.
I know.
6 weeks out.
Jesus Christ. That's crazy. Hey, it's going to be so exciting. We're going to be down there for a whole week, so hit us up.
Yeah, 100%. We'll have some beers.
Mm.
Talk MotoGP.
We love it. Thanks.
See you guys.
See you guys.